welcome to Kayak Fishing the Wild West on kayakfishingradio.com. It's Friday, February the 10th, 2012, and we're blazing into and through a whole new year. I'm your host, Dennis Spike from kayakfishing.com, joined by our very fishy co-host, Isaac the Nothing Miller in Portland, Oregon. Isaac, what's shaking?
Oh, man. Just having fun this week.
Another week in the great Northwest?
Yep, you know.
Being a fishmonger, you've at least seen some fish, huh?
We're seeing some fish. Man, I got some of the best-looking fish in a while this week. That's always makes me happy when that truck rolls up and the fish that are in it are nice and fresh and smelling of the sea.
I dropped Michelle off at the hotel tonight and walked back through the kitchen, and there was a beautiful half of a giant halibut laying in a box. The thing was probably in the ocean just 24, 48 hours ago.
That's beautiful, beautiful thing, isn't it?
I like it a lot. You know, if I can jump right into it, halibut, before this became my livelihood, this kayak fishing thing, I was the halibut king in Malibu, fishing off of my kayak. And that's fishing for what most of you northerners would consider those chicken-sized California halibuts. But they get up to 50 pounds. My biggest fish was probably in the low 40s. And
but it's a different type of halibut.
We're
talking the California halibut.
But it doesn't appear that different from the Pacific halibut as far as the quality of the fillet.
That's very true.
That is true. Okay, good. I just want to make sure I knew what I was talking about. And it was my favorite fish. There were times, especially after the gillnet ban, and now I'm not wondering if this isn't natural cycle more and coincidence more than the gillnet ban impact. But we were releasing 7, sometimes 10, legal halibut, and some of those were 20 and 30 pound fish, because we just couldn't justify taking any more fish, but we were having so much fun. And a lot of it was live bait fishing, and the bait of the day, if you could catch either a 4-inch smelt or any sardine, that meant another halibut. Any other bait, live squid, mackerel, didn't cut bait, plastic jigs, didn't matter, didn't work. You could figure out the bait for the day. You're going to catch as many halibut as you could put baits down. And makes it a little trickier when you're catching your bait from your kayak, but it makes it a lot more fun. What I was going to say about all that and about you getting that fish in and how fresh fish is, and I don't care if you're in Portland or San Francisco or up in Colorado, and I got to tell you, the first time I ate sushi in Colorado in a sushi bar, it was a funky experience for me, being just in my head, being so far from the sea. But when you catch halibut on your kayak, and this is true, I don't know about most fish, but with a lot of species, after you catch and dress your fish and you've got those fillets in the fridge, it's like the second or third day. And sometimes with a halibut, even the fourth day after catching the fish and processing it, where it really gets that restaurant quality. Some of the moisture is leached out of the fillet. It gets, especially if you're doing sashimi on the smaller fishes, the flesh gets that waxy sushi or sashimi consistency to it when you cut it. So everybody talks about fresh fish, and I agree. Fresh fish is great. I wouldn't turn down a fresh fish out of the water any day. But people, I think a lot of people overlook that when we catch a fish like a halibut, it's really going to be best for the table a couple days after it comes out of the water. Do you agree?
Agreed.
I do.
I'm trying to remember the word. But
there's some science to that?
There is. And, of course, the science of aging fish comes from Japan. They definitely believe fish should go through rigor mortis and all of that before you eat it. So they do have, the Japanese know everything about seafood, almost anyway. And they, like I said, they do have a whole science behind that. And the name of that whole process is just on the tip of my tongue.
If you come up with it in the next hour, I would love to hear it. And that's very cool. You know, before all this fishing stuff, I had gotten my degree in traditional Chinese medicine, acupuncture in the bigger picture. And a lot of what you say about how the Japanese treat their fish is a lot about how that the whole Asian culture treats life. And I see that transcending into, you know, healthcare. And you know, it's funny, in America, when a guy goes through or a girl goes through med school, if they don't write a paper and get published, or several anymore, you know, it's like they didn't work their way through school. But in the Orient and in the old days, they'd go 10 generations to figure out one little thing about the human body and healthcare, or, you know, and that whole fish philosophy goes into that too, the patience and observance. And I really liked that idea. And it was pretty much an accident how I came upon that. I mean, when I started catching a lot of halibut back then in the 80s, I guess it was, in Malibu, I just noticed that on that second or third day, I had exactly the same fresh halibut I was getting at the sushi bar. And it laid over the rice really nice. You could work with it, do anything with it. And it's funny, those times out on the boat, I mean, there's so many ridiculous things that happen to us on boats. And I guess a lot of it, not I guess, you know, a lot of it's the fishing of macho, the macho of fishing. But for one thing, I will never eat the visceral organ of any fish or shark when it comes on the boat. You've heard these traditions of eating the heart of your first yellowtail or your first thresher shark.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Well, this is where the parasites live, okay? I can see somebody downing a live anchovy, you know. It's just like a stiff Caesar. But as far as eating the organs of animals, and you've heard of this? You've heard of people doing that? I'm sure in the Northwest people have a tradition of eating the heart of the albacore. A, that is one thing I would never do. But then a lot of people, and you see it a lot when I fish, like with my Hawaiian friends, there's always, it's like a religious thing that there will be soy and wasabi on board any trip you ever go on, because if they catch something, they want to sashimi it right there on the boat. And the truth is, man, I love sashimi. I would rather, I have trouble putting heat to a lot of the fish that I catch, because I want to eat them all raw. But when it comes to just coming out of the water, a lot of these saltwater species, they need that 2 or 3 days, especially a tuna. The last thing I want to eat sashimi is tuna when it's coming right off of the fish. There needs to be some processing going on there. Because like you said, there's no rigor set in. Those body fluids, my position is, there's so much moisture in the meat, you know, that it occludes the true flavor that we're looking for. Did you come up with that Japanese word yet?
No, I haven't.
That's okay.
Japanese,
we'll get
Japanese
it to listeners. I want
familiar.
To remind live listeners right now, Isaac, that, and thanks for letting me steamroll here. I wanted to remind our live listeners that you can call in and be a guest on the show, pose questions, get information. And there's also a chat room, a live chat room that coincides. You'll see it all online at kayakfishingradio.com. And while we are based here on the West Coast of the United States, we take calls, even Canadian calls, but we take calls from all over the U.S., and we want to hear from you all. We will be moving the show next week to from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So if it's a quiet Friday night on the East Coast or anywhere in between, and you're just getting tucked in, we found that we are going to get a lot more live listeners on the show if we move it a little later. Being in California and Portland and Seattle on the West Coast at 5 o'clock on a Friday can sometimes be challenging to tune into the show. So we're going to see what happens at 8 o'clock. And Isaac, we are going to do some talking tonight. I have some big news. Oh, the big news I just gave you about moving the show. Isaac, do you mind if I give a quick weather report, some local reports?
Please, by all means.
And a couple of announcements that I wanted to squeeze into the show, and then we'll get into the topic of the night, which, what did you say you wanted to go with? Fishing kayaks?
Boats.
Boats. All
big
right. You know these boats are made the same way, like they make keychains and stuff? We can talk about that, too. Reports. Isaac is up in Portland. I am down here adjacent to Bodega Bay, California, home of Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds. That's about an hour and a half north of the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco. And we've got quite the fishery here. We've got the Russian River. We've got the San Francisco Bay system. And we have got the coast. The coast is pretty much closed to the majority of fishing right now. But starting at Bodega Bay, there is a constant Dungeness crab bite going on. The party boat, Captain Rick Powers, on the New Sea Angler. Rick Powers in this region has single-handedly saved party boating. And a salty dog, you got to love him for that. For the second year in a row, Captain Powers has scrubbed fishing for the giant squids. Isaac, there will be no more attempts to catch squid here. And the good news is we have healthy salmon populations. I don't know if it's bad news, the giant squid are gone. And lending more to my informal study and theory that the squid are a massive predatory species and feature in this Pacific Bight and in the Humboldt Current. And the natural cycle, they're not going to show up here every year. And I have a feeling as the generations go on and we keep seeing those jumbos, those giant squids, that it's going to be on years when we don't see as many salmon. And that was a theory that was tossed out. Maybe the salmon are gone because the squid are here. Well, who knows? Maybe. Of course, we're not catching any of those squids with salmon in them, but we don't seem to catch them with much of anything in them. I'm going to look up the studies on that. I think they have pretty fast digestion going on. And again, if they're just eating schooling salmon out there, the babies or the young ones coming out, that could be a problem too. San Francisco Bay, there have been a few sturgeon caught. There's been a really excellent, it's not kayak fishing, but there's been really excellent perch bite on all the pilings and structures around the bay. And walleye surf perch and shiners and other species. And perch is fun if you're a fisherman this time of year and you don't have great kayak fishing, the perch bite. And you've got the perch up in Oregon too, don't you, Isaac?
We do. It
yeah, it's a big closet fishery, that perch thing, and a lot of fun. You talk about going out there onto the beach with some light tackle, 6-pound test. A lot of people use 4. You get into some battle royales. On the bay, there have been a few stripers too, but it's been really, really windy. And the reports I saw, striped bass are up like in the Napa River, where there people are getting a little more protection from those open winds. But we've got just a few cells blowing in off the Pacific for another day or so. A little bit of rain, just light showers, no real oomph or wind coming with it. And it looks like the next week, it could be a whole week before we see more rain. A little bit of river going in. There's good steelhead fishing still on a day-to-day basis up at the higher branches of the Russian River up towards Healdsburg. But I know if they're up high, kayaks sneak down low, and they're going to find some fish, too. I wanted to mention, isn't there a boondoggle going down next week in Florida?
There is. They got their President's Day boondoggle. I don't know a whole lot about what's going on, but, man, they got a 3-day weekend. They have packed a campground. They're filling up the local hotels. They've got raffles going on. Tons of prizes on the line. Fishing trips with local guides like Steve Gibson, Shallow Pockets Fishing down there. I know he's got a trip. Several other kayak fishing guides in Florida have contributed, guided fishing trips.
Fantastic.
Paddles, seats, gear, tackle. It's just amazing. They got a ton of stuff. I'm quite jealous that Florida just happens to be 3,300 miles away. Otherwise, I'd be there myself. So,
Our time will come, Isaac. Be patient. Our time will come. And, you know, beyond everything, the Boone, they'll be giving away a few of the kayak fishing video DVDs at Boondoggle. And beyond everything, it is great, great, great exposure for our sport. And we've never seen, I say it probably on every show, we've never seen a section of recreational fishing that has the sense of community that we find in kayak fishing. And it's just fantastic. If anybody wants information, go to yakfishing.com. That would be the right place, wouldn't it, Isaac?
Yakangler.com.
I'm sorry. Thanks for being there to correct me. Yakangler.com as he scratches his notes.
And
you'll get all the Boondoggle information. We are hoping to hook up a Boondoggle in the fall here in Northern California. It would be a fly in to San Francisco or Oakland and get 2 or 3 days in on the Sonoma coast, and it's very fishy. A whole different style of fishing. What's that?
I'm willing to drive 14 hours so long as I can bring my kayak. And
well, that brings me to Gimme Shelter, which is going down on, what is it, the 20...
Yeah, we'll get to Gimme Shelter.
Gimme Shelter. Do you do that event?
Yeah.
Did you say yes, Isaac?
I will not. I will not be able to get down there this time.
I do know
we have at least one, at least one person is making the drive down to Morgan. Unfortunately, just not going to work out for me this time.
Well, I hope this will be my first time going to Gimme Shelter. And from what I hear, it is the Woodstock of kayak fishing events.
You know, it is probably one of the biggest, awesomest events on the West Coast. I wanted to backtrack real quick about the Boondoggle. For folks that don't know, the Boondoggle, it's just a get-together. It's not a fishing tournament. It's just a couple dozen guys and kayaks fishing and camping for the weekend. Family-friendly event. There's plenty of wives and kids running around.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's definitely a family event.
Yeah, and it's just hanging out and fishing. There's no stress of, you know, tournament fishing.
Competition or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's a friendly kayak fishing hang.
Yep. Good times. And I think there's, Albion's almost that way, is it not? As far as I understand.
It is. There's a handful of California events that are pretty big. And Albion has quite the party going on, too.
Yeah. Let's backtrack again.
Sure.
Two weeks ago, you had the Crab Derby.
You know, I missing last week's show, I forgot to give you a report on Crab Fest 2012, which was a huge success. There were 90-some registered participants, and easily 100-plus spectators, friends, and family who showed up for the event. It was another 6-hour fishing event that took 3 days to culminate because it was at Doran Beach right there at Bodega Bay, at the mouth of Bodega Bay. There's a campground there with facilities. People were in tents, trucks, RVs. It was a fantastic gathering. Lots of the big name anglers from NCKA, lots of the little name anglers. It was just fantastic. Dan from Lodi came out, and Dan has Headwaters Kayak Shop, and he brought about 30 sea kayakers with him, gave them their first introduction to kayak fishing, and they were way into it. Really a great group out there, and you had everything from sailing kayaks to pedal craft to kayaks going out. And it was the rules were not weight but length, the biggest crab. So this was not the heaviest crab caught, but it was the biggest, and it was caught by Jonesy. And if you read the NCKA.org website forums, Jonesy is a prolific kayak fisherman. This is not his first event win. And he went home with a new Cobra Navigator that Dan donated. And this was a no-pay, low competition kind of event. But when you have 100 people vying for one kayak, I think everybody's there for fun.
But
when you start seeing the same guys winning these events, maybe that ain't quite the case.
Now, was he running rings or was he dropping pots?
I do not know.
Oh, okay.
I do not know what he did to land that winner. And there was
no pre-fishing,
so people had to go out with their gear. And I know they used both. That is a good question, though. I don't know
One thing that I've learned when it comes to crab events, you want to churn and burn to give them, a bass fishing saying. It's burning through, and the best way to do that is with rings. You drop your bait down, you run a string of rings, you drop one, you drop the next one, you drop the third one, you go back to the beginning, grab that first one again, and start going for crab.
Work them as hard as you can.
Exactly. You got to work it. And, I know the first guest of the West Coast shows, Michael Richard, who was on here, like the first show, he won our crab derby, that very same method, running rings, and he puts the smack on crab all year long, running rings on the Orient Coast.
I've seen a lot of video, people who put cameras down with their nets, how fast crab and lobster can move through your nets.
It's
pretty amazing. Even with the greatest of bait, a lot of times they're not just hanging out and chewing. They move through them real quick, so that theory sounds pretty good.
Yep.
What else you got, Isaac?
That's what I got. Icky Heeby. Look that up.
I-C-H-I?
I-K-I-J-I-M-E. It's not exactly what I was talking about earlier, but it is the Japanese practice of killing fish. The way they cull fish that they're keeping, basically tuna spikes, getting them bled out, that type of thing. But it does fall in line with what we were talking about earlier of, aging fish for best flavor. That's a place to start, though. Pretty interesting science the Japanese have when it comes to their fish.
Ikijimi. Very good. I'm sure it goes a long way from there. And I look forward to that. On the exotic end right now, Alan Sansone from NCKA has got his first group of anglers out to Christmas Island. And I think they're there now through the 16th. And I can't imagine the sleigh rides these people are going to get into.
I
look forward to those reports. The big Jack Craval, big amberjacks, tunas. I think there's wahoo just about everything. All the big tropical open water Pacific fishes, and they got it going kayak fishing. So I'm really excited about that one, and we'll see what's going on out in the Pacific on Christmas Island. See if anybody comes back.
Now, half of the boats on the Christmas Island kayak fishing, you can go to ChristmasIslandKayakFishing.com to get all the details about these trips.
Right.
And I can't say half, but two of the five boats on the Christmas Islands are Diablo Paddle Sport sit-on tops.
I think I read that. And those are a unique style of fishing kayak, aren't they?
That they are. You know what? I have one. Actually, I have the Diablo Chupacabra, which is their smaller 10.5-foot kayak. Alan Christmas Islands is their Adios. It's their first boat, the original. It's a 12.5-foot long. It's a stand-up paddleboard / sit-on-top kayak hybrid.
Right. It's a hybrid.
Right. The ones that they have out there, like I said, the Adios, 12.5 feet long, 36 inches wide. But like I said, it's a hybrid. You can stand up and paddle it. You can sit down and paddle it. And it's a unique, excellent, awesome kayak. I love them, to say the least. Like I said,
the fleet is growing, it sounds like.
Yeah. I've only had my Chupacabra for a couple of weeks, but, man, I've wanted that boat since I first laid eyes on it. But almost.
I think that's how a lot of kayaks grab people, too, is, you know, that love at first sight thing. When the sport really started growing, which was back in the mid-90s, people, the predecessors of kayak fishing were guys fishing longboards. And there's still in Florida and La Jolla a couple of annual longboard events that are real high-profile events. A lot of turnout. People have been fishing them for a lot of years. But with the plastic sit-on-top kayaks, the sport of kayak fishing came into its own, and it really was that peanut butter and chocolate combination going on. My point being that back in the day, and the day being a very short time ago, the mid-90s, the bulk of this sport, I think, started with anglers who either didn't have the money to buy a powerboat or didn't want to spend the money on a powerboat and the cost of fishing and the low level for money spent of hours on the water, which, again, takes me always to the party boat scene. But that's where, you know, you have to drive to the landing, motor to the fishing grounds, get precious little time actually fishing, motor back to the landing and drive home, and all of a sudden you've spent a small fortune. The family's PO'd because you've wasted the whole day, and it's expensive, and oftentimes you're not coming home with fish. All of a sudden, these plastic kayaks come around. And in the beginning, people wanted basic, and they wanted easy, and they wanted really inexpensive. And in 16 short years, we've seen so many more manufacturers come out. And now we're starting to see hybrids and stuff that I call unique product. And I think that the Diablo product, and, you know, one thing I should mention, a lot of people in kayak fishing, if you haven't heard the name already, eventually you will, and that's Tim Niemeyer. Tim Niemeyer was the founder of Ocean Kayak and made a kayak he intended for diving called the Scupper, and then another one called the Scrambler. And those were two flagship boats for the manufacturer Ocean Kayak. And Tim Niemeyer sold that company, went into his own design business, and was directly involved with the design of the Diablo products.
Yep, exactly.
You knew that.
I did.
And that's a big plus. You start talking about any product out there, you know, New Canoe. Yeah. You look at New Canoe, and a lot of guys in kayak fishing go, what's that? But New Canoe actually has a real place on the water. And again, another Tim Niemeyer association there. So when I first heard about the Diablo boats, I knew it would be unique and I knew it would be special. And I dig them too. I'm sure that one day the Diablo boats will be in, there will be one in my rack, and I look forward to putting it out on the water.
Yeah, like I said, they are great boats.
Easy to move around?
Very easy to move around.
What is it weigh, Isaac, the 10-footer?
Oh, what is that? I'd say about 60 pounds.
Hey, could you ship one of those like you would a surfboard?
Yeah.
I'll bet you could. I'll bet you could. You know, that's another. Didn't you tell me you just got a new inflatable, too?
Yeah.
What'd you get there? Gee whiz. It's Isaac, the nothing but a big boatyard miller.
Yeah, I'm wondering how many kayaks it takes before you could actually say you have a armada of kayaks.
I think that's the third one, dude.
I think it's 3 to 4 is a fleet. Oh. You know, once you get beyond that, maybe 6 is an armada. I don't know. But, yeah, I just got yesterday, so I haven't even had a chance to get it on the water. And the wife won't even let me blow it up in the living room.
Oh, man, that's tough.
Yeah.
And what is it?
It is a NRS, North River Supply, inflatable kayak called the Pike.
The Pike?
The Pike.
They were one letter off. Actually, there was a boat called the Spike that came out of Necky many years ago. The little brother to the Necky Dolphin was called the Spike. And that was named after their sales rep, whose first name was Spike. Little kayak history. And it was a very fishable boat, if you fit in it.
I'll have to look into that one. But the Pike, I guess it's an inflatable kayak made by NRS. And I know we've dropped the NRS name here on the show before. High-quality inflatable boats. These guys do pontoon boats, catacraft, class 4, 5, rapid whitewater running boats. So they know the inflatable market. They own it, in my opinion. They've made a fishing kayak that's inflatable. I threw the backpack on yesterday. I could throw it in the front seat of my car, in the passenger seat.
And this is a single person, the Pike, right?
This one is a single person kayak. It's 12 and a half feet long. Looking at some of the other inflatable kayaks from NRS, you could definitely run two people on this boat. Just got to rearrange things. Of course, you're not going to have a whole lot of room for fishing gear either. The bottom of the kayak, the floor of the kayak, they're using their drop stitch technology. Generally, inflatables, you're running about 2.5 pounds of air pressure. Well, with this drop stitch technology, they have a very flat bottom, and it runs 9 to 12 pounds per square inch air pressure. So this is a rigid kayak. Very strong, very durable. They're basically, what they did is they shaved down one of their inflatable stand-up paddle boards and then, put ladders around the outside, call it a kayak. But of
very
course,
interesting.
Like I said, these guys know inflatables, and I fell in love with this kayak the moment I saw it last summer at ICAST, and it just was released to the market about 3 weeks ago on the NRS website, which is nrswebwv.com. We've covered the NRS both from ICAST on yakangler.com. We got a great video on there, tells you all about the kayak. And that was recorded live at the show last year. Pretty sweet stuff. This thing will have no problem running, class 2 and 3 whitewater with you asleep. Laying down.
Really? Think it's going to track nice and flat water? I look forward to hearing your reports on this.
It has a removable skeg on the kayak, and it comes with two different size skegs depending on what you're doing. If you're running the river, you're going to put on that small skeg, but if you're out on the lake, in a bay, any other larger water, they've got a full-size skeg, which is going to help you track a little bit straighter.
I've tried a lot of inflatables over the years, and when Cousin Howie and I started fishing our kayaks together, we came from inflatables. We started with the Sevilars and had death-defying experiences, and then we moved up to Avons and Zodiacs, and, it was that simply roto-molded first plastic kayak that caught our eye and got us into that, and we, never looked at a pump again. But over the years, I've had the opportunity to evaluate a lot of inflatable kayaks from companies intended. I've even endorsed one, but I never found one that I fell in love with, one that I said, I want to put this on a plane, and I want to take it somewhere, and I want to use this. instead of finding a cheap rental in a milk crate. And so I'm looking forward to hearing your review on this. And knowing NRS and their history, and I'm not aware of all the plugs they've had here, so I'll just lay one more down myself. I've never heard anything but good about them and their products. If I can double plug here, I found about 10 years ago a dry bag because I kept buying all the popular dry bags. And, man, I was going through them like socks. And you got to realize I am a kayak fishing gorilla. I from day one, I've been hard on my gear. And then when it became my job, I think I got a little harder on my gear because I make a lot of referrals and recommendations, and I want to know what's going to last. And all my favorite stuff when it came to dry bags was breaking and wearing out, you know, within two seasons. And then I found these bags, and you've probably never heard of the company, Jax Plastic Welding. Have you heard of them, Jax?
I have. Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
If you're not into the rivers and river rafting, or you haven't looked at every link at kayakfishing.com, you probably haven't heard of them. And I don't even know how I got hooked up. And it might have been going to, like, the DEMA show. Not the DEMA show, the outdoor retailer show that I've cruised intermittently every 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, that's where that came into.
I might have found them there. And but this guy was telling me about his dry bags that he gets testimonials from customers who have river rafting operations, where these bags are in the river rafts and getting slammed into the sides of canyon walls. And while the bags get bruised, he's getting testimony that they bought tent bags 10 years ago and they're still on the water. And that has been darn near my experience. I mean, a dry bag that lasts at least 5 years is giving you a lot more for your money. They're a little bit more expensive. And the main part of his – actually, I believe the main part of his business is dry bags and a product called Pico Pads or Peco Pads. Jax is in Aztec, New Mexico, which normally you'd expect somebody to be a lot closer to the water, but apparently there's a lot of rivers in that part of northern New Mexico. And so they get a lot of opportunity to get on the water and R&D. They make camp pads. I can't remember the popular ones. I think they're made by Cascade, you know, the self-inflating camp pads.
Right.
Well, he makes one called his Pico Pad or Peco Pad. And okay. I've heard from people that this thing is the quality lush, if you're going to sleep outdoors on the ground, pad to have. And they're not cheap by any means, but this stuff lasts a long, long time. And I just hooked up with Jack again, and hopefully he's going to be bringing some products to the kayak fishing section. And you were talking about all those great boats that NRS makes. Jack's Plastic Welding, I've never had experience with one, but I know that's a big part of his business as well, the big pontoon boat. And, you know, Isaac, I'm sure you know it, the Susquehanna, the Pennsylvania and Ohio rivers, there's a lot of what kayak fishermen out there in pontoon boats and inflatable craft, fishing for smallies.
Yeah.
There's a lot of specialty craft in our sport.
There is. Now, there's a new kayak new for North America, anyway, sit-on-top fishing kayaks. Isn't that right?
What's that?
Isn't there a fairly new company to the North American
kayak fishing
market?
You're talking about my boat?
Yeah.
You're talking about my boat? The greatest fishing kayak ever? Are you talking about RTM, the French-made boats?
That I am.
That it is. You know, it's starting to get quite a buzz going, too. About 3 years ago, you know, I've been doing this since before I first published kayakfishing.com. I started writing and getting published about kayak fishing in 1995, February. And that is pretty much when the sport started getting people's attention, when they started reading about it in fishing magazines. And I got very, very lucky. I was in the right place at the right time, the first guy out of the chute. And Pete Gray, who owns a radio show out of San Diego called Let's Talk Fishing, or Let's Talk Hookup, radio show. And he gets like 4 hours on the weekend, two on Saturday, two on Sunday. And it's a big show and a big part of fishing radio and the community in Southern California. And Pete had me on the show. I was embraced by Fred Hall and his son, Bart Hall, the promoter of the Fred Hall fishing shows. And they embraced kayak fishing. And all these people collectively helped me promote a sport at a time when the internet was just getting going. And that internet was the $1 million worth of advertising and promotion that I never would have had to grow the sport of kayak fishing. I was very lucky. I was gifted kayakfishing.com by Chuck Marlette, who is the web manager to this day. And my whole career, the point I'm getting to, Isaac, is that for 16 years, I never said, this is the number one boat that I'm going to recommend to you. Because I never felt there was a boat that was that great. And I fished my first 10 years in the Scupper Classic, you know, the one of the first roto-molded kayak to come out, I believe, was the Scupper Classic from Ocean Kayak. They don't even make this boat anymore. And
still one of the most highly regarded.
I'm telling you, because it was made 25, 30 years ago, and people who bought them, for the most part, still have them. And they were made to last, you know. This was the beginning of this process. And so much has happened in just 15, 16 years of kayak fishing and making boats for anglers. We went from having just a couple of companies who made these boats to now we literally have dozens of companies who make boats targeting anglers. And it's funny, when I first saw Kayak Angler Magazine run the 160 best fishing kayaks, I might be exaggerating that, but I couldn't believe it, because the reality was that if you look at all the kayaks that, yes, are fishable, you've got a dozen boats, 15 styles of boats maybe, that sell the most. And it's as simple as that. And all the years, whether I was taking their ad or not, I recommended, in my experience, all the best fishing kayaks to anglers. And I've been lucky enough through kayakfishing.com and all these shows and everything else to recommend thousands of boats to thousands of anglers over the years. And it's really a cool, cool thing. And most people have gotten anywhere from 3 to 7, a list of from 3 to 7. And I always have a policy of fitting the angler to the boat and the fishery. It's a three-way. The boat's got to fit the fishery, and the angler's got to fit the boat. And boats are, you know, each boat has their particularity. In certain waters, you need boats that are quiet because fish can be spooky. You know, this is something we don't even think about in California unless we're fishing on sweet water, on fresh water. But you don't think about spooking fish in salt water. I don't anyway. It's never seemed to have been an issue. If they're going to get spooked by me being there, they're too small to catch. But as time went on, and I get almost daily, especially in season, referrals from anglers all over North America. This is what I'm looking at. What boat do I buy? What's your opinion? And that's what we invite. And it's not me. There's a handful of other guides, Trout Trobman, Joey Schutz, who have taken these calls from anglers through kayakfishing.com for years and years and years. And then one year I took an ad from a company in France. Now, to give you a quick history, Rotomod, RTM Kayaks, it's two names, the same company. And RTM has been in the rotational molding business for about 30 years now. And that's what our boats are. You know those red lifeguard cans, they call them, that the Baywatch lifeguards run into the water with? Well, those things are made exactly the same way our kayaks are made. They're probably a little easier to make, but it's a plastic mold that goes on a spinner. It looks like a cocoon. And while it's spinning, they heat it up and inject plastic into it. And you can either get a keychain, a lifeguard can, or a up to 18-foot plastic kayak. And that's what our kayaks are. And when Ocean Kayak started getting big, they really are even today, I mean, one of the world leaders in kayak manufacturing, they sent some of their manufacturing for Europe to Europe. And RTM already was a rotational molder, and they had some kayaks and stuff. But they made the Ocean Kayak brand in France for Europe for 10 years. So they have a lot of experience with Ocean Kayak. When that relationship ended, as all relationships eventually do, they started looking more at the fishing section and came out with their own line of kayaks for fishing. And Molly, who used to, when I made my first call in 1994, before my first article came out, we knew through the shows coming up and everybody else and the publisher at the magazine, we knew that kayak fishing was going to be big. You know, it hadn't even started, and there was a buzz going on just from people talking about it. And where was I going with all of this? Yeah, that's what I get for trying to multitask here. So in the beginning, when all this buzz was going on, I'm sorry, Isaac, I completely lost it.
Oh, man.
I completely lost it. I had written the article, the buzz was going on about kayak fishing, and I don't remember where I was going with all of it.
Okay,
I made a call. That's what it was. I was practicing acupuncture, man. I was renting space from a chiropractor and seeing some of his patients, seeing some of my own, building a practice, and I didn't even go into the clinic until 1 p.m. because I was fishing my kayak every morning. That's how I got through school, and I had been fishing it before I started school, and it was a lifestyle thing. I mean, it was just like surfing. You know, I would have done that. Surfing, you just get home a little earlier. And when that first article came out, things busted wide open. And I went from being an acupuncturist to being an outdoor writer and growing this whole kayak fishing thing. And, you know, since then, so many changes have happened, and there I'm right back on track, Isaac. So the first call that I made, thinking, do I really want to pursue fishing as a business? Because that's like an ultimate dream, and not a very realistic one, because I did a lot of homework. And all the guys I grew up with, I don't know if you'll know the names like Kit McNear and Don Iovino. These were guys who had charter businesses in the ocean in Southern California. They were champion bass fishermen. And in the 70s, they were able to have a fishing business, being a guide, having a charter business, writing a book, making a lure, and put kids through college. But by the 90s, when I came into it, you know, you couldn't put a dog through college doing any of those things. And those guys had all gone on, like Ronnie Kovacs, to teaching, educational, instructional, the Penn Fishing Universities. Everybody was writing books, columns. Everybody became a writer. And this is before the internet era. And I saw that these guys who had put their kids through college in the 70s and bought their homes were to stay in the business and generate incomes that were worthy incomes, had to do 5 or 6 different things. And the publisher of the magazine walked me through the Fred Hall shows, and he said, he goes, I've never seen what's happening to you happen in sport fishing. You're being extended an invitation into this section, and I've never seen that happen. And it took me about 7 seconds to think about it. I accepted the invitation, and I almost lived in my car for 10 years making it happen. But the first call I made, business call I made, was I called that 800 number at Ocean Kayak. Those were the boats that I used, or I used that. Howie had, I believe it was called a Dimension Solo. Have you ever heard of it? It was a Canadian-style, a Canadian-manufactured boat It's sold, I think, a few times since, and I think it's out there somewhere. And it's got a giant bucket seat in it with no scuppers. So you've got kick your feet to get the water out of it. And I don't know all these years how he still got it. I don't know all these years it ever should have been in the open ocean. But it worked, and I saw him catch some tremendous fish off of that boat. I called the 800 number at Ocean Kayak. This is how this kayak thing came about for me. And Molly was the customer service rep, and she picked up the phone. We had a talk. Well, 13, 15 years later, she ends up moving with Ocean Kayak to Europe, going with RTM after they were no longer making Ocean Kayak because she lived in Europe, and repping the United States. She called me 3 years ago, gave me an ad at kayakfishing.com, and sent me a half a dozen of her boats, and I was absolutely blown away. And a lot of people have read about this already. They had what I consider the best tandem for fishing, one that two adults could fish all day long with and still be friends at the end of the day, and have good fishing in a seaworthy, navigable boat. And the other one was they made what I felt was the best big man boat out there. So about a year ago, I called Molly up in Germany, and I said, hey, I think I want to sell those French boats. And she couldn't believe that I wanted to sell boats because I just spent 16 years recommending, as I saw them, all the great kayaks for fishing to anglers who contacted me. But all of a sudden, I found a boat that was a quality of the old Ocean Kayaks, the old scuppers, and boats that are going to last, I think, 30 years or more. And they have unique fishing features and construction, and I absolutely dig them. And I told her I wanted to sell some of her boats, maybe, she said, well, I just gave the company notice on good terms. They need somebody in the U.S. Why don't you take over the repping? And that's what I did. I am repping the U.S. and Mexico with the exclusion of the state of Florida and South Jersey that have their own reps, great guys, and I'm really stoked about it. And in the year that it took me to negotiate this relationship, because I thought it was a big thing, as did everybody else, that I'm all of a sudden going to say, hey, I'm going to recommend all the best kayaks, but if they're not the RTMs, I'm going to recommend them used. Because I think I have found, for somebody who doesn't want a specialty boat, but wants a special boat and the best thing out there, because we're not looking to sell the cheapest boats, although they're amazingly competitively priced with the best fishing kayaks out there. I think I've got my hands on the best line of fishing kayaks. And in the year of negotiations, they came out with I was sold on their tandem and their big man boat. And I was kind of blown away because the big man boat will fit a smaller angler, but it's 66 pounds. You know, without all the gear on it, not many guys who are 5'6", 165 pounds are going to be getting that boat for kayak fishing. But they came out with a boat to fit that guy or a guy going as heavy as 230 called the Abaco. And I am pretty much letting the boats speak for themselves. They've given me a very special opportunity to bring RTM to the U.S. Again, these boats have been in Florida for 10 years without anybody touting them real loud. They've had a little bit of buzz there, but the kayak selling market is very busy right now. There's a lot of opportunities for anglers. There are a lot of choices, but I think I found something special, and we're getting I've only introduced it pretty much in my region. Excuse me, up here in central Northern California or North Central region. And I'm really excited about it. And I think as time goes on, as the boats start to proliferate, we're giving one away at Shelter Cove. There's another great reason to go to Gimme Shelter, huh?
Yeah.
Have I still got you, Isaac?
Oh, yeah, I'm still here.
I got to hit the Diet Snapple here. Another shameless plug.
Wow, but look at you go. Well, hey, you know, we're getting pretty close to the end of the show here. Time for us to start wrapping up. Before we did that, I wanted to invite everyone next weekend. Here in Portland, we are going to have I am doing a fly fishing from a kayak clinic with Soul River, soulriver-runsdeep.com. They also have a meetup group that meets up pretty much once a month in the Portland area. It's all about fly fishing. But next weekend, it's going to be kayak fly fishing. I'm really excited for that. I'm going to bring a couple of kayaks with me.
That would be a good show for us, too, next week.
Yeah, why not? So it gives me a chance to kind of rehearse some of the stuff I'm going to be talking about the next day.
Use a breathing treatment here.
It's
that change of weather, I tell you. So when's this event, Isaac?
This is next Saturday, the 18th.
Portland area?
Portland area. We're still working on a exact location. Hoping to have that nailed down by the end of this weekend for sure.
The listeners will be able to get that next week on the show.
And having a hard time trying to find a place that we can get the kayaks into for an indoor location. So hopefully we can get something panned out next weekend. So that's Soul River Runs Deep. They're on Facebook, the Twitters, and their own website, soulriver-runsdeep.com and meetup.com. And there's a Soul River listing in there somewhere. I think it's SRN verse. But Soul River is a local fly fishing kind of lifestyle wear. Apparel, they're building rods. They've got some fabulous looking fly reels. I haven't been able to try them out yet, but it's going to happen one of these days. Pretty cool looking stuff. And yeah, that's all I got.
Pretty exciting.
Yeah.
I want to thank you, Isaac, and I want to thank everybody for listening live and listening to our archived shows. We'll be back next week at 8 o'clock Pacific time. That's 11 at night on the East Coast. We want to hear from you.
Yeah, you know, it's Friday. They got to be out partying.
It's winter. Let's keep it fishy.
Okay. There you go.
Are you taking us out, Isaac?
Well, I thought I was going to leave that up to you. Pretty good at that.
Well, I think we're out. I want to thank everybody for joining us. It was another week of Kayak Fishing the Wild West, and I hope you learned something here. And I know that I did, and I'm looking forward to more. Every Monday through Friday, 5 o'clock Monday through Thursday, 8 o'clock Pacific time. These are Pacific times, on kayakfishingradio.com. From all over the United States, coast to coast, lots of kayak fishing talk. Join us. Take us out, Isaac. We'll see you next week at 8 p.m.